you. So in the meantime, if you during my talk, if you have any questions, please feel free to interrupt, and I'll be happy to answer your question. Now, so today I'll talk about how to use double helix production to look for new physics. And the main part of the talk is based on this paper. And so if you want to know more about the detail, you can look into this paper. And okay, let's proceed. So as many of you already know that the Higgs boson was discovered more than 2 years ago at CERN Large Hadron Collider is an extremely important scientific breakthrough because we not only discover a new particle, but also this particle may explain the mass origin of all other particles. Looking ahead, what's next we can do after the discovery of the Higgs boson? There are many options in front of us. For example, we can build an ILC, International Linear Collider, or we can go higher energy, build a 100 TeV collider. If we are interested in precision measurement, International Linear Collider is a good option because it has E plus E minus initial state, and it's a very the QC background is very small compared with Hadron Collider. So we can measure the Higgs coupling to other standard model particle very well. On the other hand, if we are interested in discovering new particles such as heavy top partner or heavy Higgs bosons, then build a 100 TeV collider is a very good option. So, and in this talk, I'm going to tell you that at 100 high energy proton-proton collider, we can not only discover new particles, but also we can measure the Higgs self-coupling pretty well. And so the precision measurement of the Higgs coupling is, Higgs self-coupling is very important because it can not only help us address one of the most fundamental questions, what is the origin of electroweak symmetry breaking, but also it can help us understand the structure of scalar potential, which is very important for it's closely connected to electroweak baryogenesis, which is the theory that may explain there's a symmetry between matter and antimatter. And in addition, if there is new physics, we also want to know how large the enhancement could be for the total cross section. And so here's the outline of my talk. First of all, I'm going to talk about Higgs potential in the standard model. And I know everybody know this, and I'm going to talk about coupling measurement and the current status of coupling measurement. And I will talk about double Higgs production in standard models, singlet model, and two Higgs doublet model, and focusing on type two. And so I will focus on this singlet model because I have a paper on it, and I'll talk about constraints on parameters in the enhancement of total cross section, and similarly for a type two Higgs doublet model, which will be based on this paper. Okay, so the current status of Higgs coupling measurement is shown here in this plot. And the variable relevant to this measurement is called signal strength, which is defined as the total cross section of the Higgs production times the branch refraction of the particle decay channel that is observed by experiment normalized to the standard model prediction. And this variable is the very good measure of the deviation of the standard model to other standard model to the Higgs boson to other standard model particle. And if mu is equal to one, then we can see that the observed Higgs boson is actually very standard model-like. And this plots by Atlas collaboration, they actually look into 5 channels, including 3 bosonic channels, Higgs to gamma gamma, Higgs to ZZ, Higgs to WW, and 2 fermionic channels, Higgs to BB bar and Higgs to tau tau. And the green band represent one sigma uncertainty. So we can see the bosonic channels are their uncertainty are relatively small compared to the fermionic channel. This is because the fermionic channels has larger QCD background. And we can see it's like all this measurement tells us the signal strength measurement is very close to 1. And
is there a combination between
So now let's look at CMS. Right. So here's the CMS result. They also look into throughout 5 different channels, and they have a combined result, which is 1.00 plus 0.14, shown here. So this is, which means that the observed standard amount, the Higgs boson that we observed is very close to the standard model prediction. Okay, so this is the current status. And so now, let me. No, I'm not aware. And so here's the theory overview of the standard model scalar potential, which is parameterized by 2 parameters, mu and lambda. And here, phi is the scalar doublet. So you can in unitary gauge, you can write down as this. Here, h is the physical Higgs, and V is vacuum expectation value of the doublet field. And you can then plug this back in and rewrite the potential in this form. So we can have a mass term, trilinear term, and quartic term of the physical Higgs field. And standard model predicts that the quartic coupling is around 190 GeV, and the trilinear coupling is 190 GeV, and quartic coupling is 0.77. Now, let's look at the production cross-section of the di-Higgs production. And so there are 5 possible channels. And as you can see, the dominant channel is gluon fusion. And the other channels are pretty subdominant, like vector boson fusion, TT bar HH, and di-Higgs production associated with the gauge boson. So in this talk, I'll just focus on gluon fusion. And so there are 2 diagrams that contribute to gluon fusion, including triangle diagram and box diagram. So and we know there's a heavy fermion loop running in this triangle and box diagram. And the dominant contribution is from top part because it has largest the equal coupling to the Higgs boson. And keep in mind that here the trilinear coupling comes in to the triangle diagram. And this is very important because this is why we can use the double Higgs production to measure trilinear coupling, right? And so we can then ask 2 questions. The first one, how do they interfere? The second one, which diagram dominates, right? So in order to answer this question, we can look at this plot by Bagger and others. And this is a plot of production cross-section of di-Higgs boson through gluon fusion as a function of trilinear coupling normalized to the standard model prediction. And this shows us the competition between the triangle and box diagram. So we can first start with 0, return of the trilinear coupling, right? Then, which means the box diagram is the only contribution. And box diagram alone gives us a contribution. If we look at the 14 TeV, the red line is around 100 Fraenkel Boeing. And so, and then we look at what about the standard model, which means the ratio is around 1. And it's around 50 GeV of 50 femtobarn. So we know that this tells us that the interference is destructive. Otherwise, you would get the higher cross section. So this answers the first question. Now, we can keep tuning up the contribution of the triangle diagram. And at some point, we know there will be minimum shown here. And that happens at the around 2.5. When the ratio is 2.5, there's a minimum. And then we keep increase the trilinear coupling, so triangle diagram would dominate over the rest of the region. So in this region, triangle diagram dominates. And between 0 and 2.5, box diagram dominates. And we know that standard model is around at the ratio equal to 1. So this answers our second question. The box diagram dominates in the standard model. And it's also interesting to look into the collider study. What about which channel would be the most interesting?
Question. Sorry, on the previous slide, that's involved with PDS, right? It's not just GD to HA.
This one, is that? No, we don't only have GGHH.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just wondering, do those numbers correspond to results where you involve the cross section with the PDFs or not?
It involved PDF. Yes. Right. And so we also want to know which channel would be a good channel to look for. And from a lot of study, they mentioned this channel is probably the best channel to study because gamma-gamma has the very clean signal and B bar has the very large branch interaction. So which means one hex decays into gamma-gamma and the other decays to BB bar. And so from the statistical significance from the ATLAS study is 1.3 sigma with the at 14 TeV with 3 inverse attobarn. And what about 100 TeV? At 100 TeV, the significance enhanced to 15 times, and it's like 15 sigma. So this is like a huge enhancement. So at 100 TeV, for sure, we can observe that Higgs production. But we can observe it doesn't mean we can measure it very well. So here's some study about how well we can measure the trilinear coupling. Here from the SNOMAS study and the latest update, we can measure it with the uncertainty around 15%. And however, now there's other groups by this paper, Barr and Azatov and others. They found at 100 TeV, 3 inverse attobarn, the uncertainty is around 40% and 30%. So this means there's still some degrees of inconsistency. But
do you know roughly why there's that difference? Is it a matter, are these papers including systematics? Or are they also just doing statistical accuracy but get a different number?
I think they just do the simulation and the uncertainty is mainly from statistics. They don't have this is what I'm going to say.
Okay.
So it's too early to draw any attention, and because it depends on many like efficiency background estimates. The background estimate is actually very tricky because you can have like gamma-gamma, what's the efficiency of a jet, light jet fake a gamma, or a chomp fake a gamma. That's also very tricky. And it also has to do with different detector simulation you're using. So it's still, maybe we can wait a little bit more, and then probably we can have a like more stable answer. So now, let's look at a possible new physics scenario. So how can new phase that comes into the dihex production. So here are two examples. And still there are some many others. And so example one, we can have a new fermion comes into the fermion loop. And it, because the eukaryotic coupling proportional to the mass of fermion, so it could be very large. And also it could also in the go into the loop of a triangle diagram. And so in this paper, we discuss some of the, this is my own paper. We discuss some of the enhancement and then how, but this is very tricky because you add the new fermion loop, it actually can contribute to single Higgs production. So it also have the constraint from single Higgs production. And the example one is the new scalar. We can add the new scalar here and in different type of model, like singlet model, I'm going to talk about it can have this H prime. So this could have another extra contribution. And so today I'm going to focus on this one. And okay, so our first talk about the singlet model and then two Higgs-Dobson model. So the basic idea is in addition to the standard model contribution, we have box diagram, triangle diagram. Here H1 is represent observed Higgs. We also have this diagram. And this S2, if that has, it can produce at resonance, if it, the branching fraction of H2 decays to H1, if this is big enough, like 50%, then it could have a very large contribution. So this is the basic idea.
Isn't, yeah. There's also the heavy Higgs will be going to WW and CC, right?
Right.
So that would presumably be based on the constraint of the branch attraction. So I guess you can dial up lambda to 1, 1 as much as you want.
Yeah.
So how do
yes.
you so are there bounds in the models or?
Yes, there are many bounds there. I'll discuss
okay.
it later. And yeah, and so now let's review the Higgs singlet model. So in this model, in addition to the standard doublet, there's another additional electroweak singlet. So the scalar potential consists of three terms, of the standard model one, standard model doublet, and then we have mu and lambda, and they're a singlet self-interaction term. Here we have S squared, S cubed, and S to the fourth term. So we here the coupling, are I'll just call it B, and then is characterized by B1, B2, B3, and B4. And we also have an interaction term. Here I use A1 and A2 to represent they have these are interactions term between doublet and singlet. And so here I just keep it general without imposing Z2 symmetry. However, in some of the Higgs portal model where the singlet is dark matter. So in order to stabilize the singlet, it's very important to apply Z2 symmetry. In that case, these three terms are removed because they violate Z2. So after spontaneous symmetry breaking, we can again write this Higgs doublet in unitary gauge. It can have this form, and V is the VEF of doublet. And here X can also get a VEF. Let's call it X. So now we can collect all the bilinear term and get a mass matrix. So, and then we can also get the angle, which can be written in this form. And so, but keep in mind that because later on I'm going to talk about the constraint, experiment constraint, theta mixing angle. So this off diagonal term actually cannot be too large, otherwise it will be a mixing angle be too big. So I'll talk about this more. And so, and then we can get the mass eigenstate H1, H2, which can be written in this form. But because S is electroweak singlet, right? So it doesn't couple to any other standard model, fermion and gauge bosons. So the only way that H1, H2 can couple to standard model gauge boson and fermion is through this little h. So as a result, the H1 has a universal suppression factor cosine theta for its coupling to other particles. And similarly, H2 has a universal suppression factor sine theta. And so the mass eigenstate of the mass eigenvalue of H1 and H2 is M1 and M2. And so later on, I'm just going to use, and M1 is the observed Higgs field and with mass 126. So later on, I'm going to use this as a parameter, or as our input parameter instead of lambda A1 and B2. Okay. So, and then we can then collect the trilinear term of the trilinear term and quartic term shown here of the physical Higgs. We have lambda 111, which is trilinear term, and lambda 1111, which is quartic term of H1. So the relevant coupling in this study is lambda 111 and lambda 211. I'm going to show you later that these couplings actually have very tighter constraint compared to B3. So we can actually, this B3 actually had a lot of freedom. We can tune up and down. So we can, eventually we found this, we can increase the total di-Higgs production cross-section by increase the value of B3. And so this is like quite important. And then we can also, so now we have a bunch of parameters, and our goal is to try to reduce parameter. And here are two extra conditions we didn't use. These are minimization conditions. So we take derivative with respect to the VAT Higgs field, and then X, and we can get these two conditions. And so, and in addition, there's a very important observation in this study, that which is a shift of the singlet field by an amount delta does not change the physics. Because it's a singlet field, it does not associate with any other field, right? So you can define an origin, like it does not change the physics. So we can define a specific origin, and then which just corresponds to redefinition of the parameters. And so using this, we can always choose X. X is the value of the singlet field. And we can always choose it to zero. Okay, and then from?
B3, sorry, but B3 is the trilinear S cubed.
Right, S cubed.
S cubed. So yeah. This doesn't include any tuning? So you can do it for any parameter between B3 before, you can choose it so that S is zero? Meaning that, do you tune the parameter of the potential? Because for generic parameters, S will get effect.
Yes, yeah, you're right. You're right. But
so you're just picking
it. You're just saying it's a singlet, so you can define S tilde as S minus
right. I mean,
express things in terms of S tilde.
Yes.
It's just a field redefinition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yes. So for example, if you got X equal to 1, and then you can always shift the redefine X, and then that just corresponds to you change, redefine your parameters.
And
So from the first equation, if you put X equal to zero, then you can solve that for V. And from the second one, if X is zero, you can solve that for B1 in terms of A1. So So now we can count the a number of model parameters. Originally, we have 8, lambda, mu lambda, a1, a2, b1, b2, b3, b4. And now we express that into the phenomenological parameters. M1 equals 126, and VEV equals to 246, and x equals to 0. So we still have 5 unknowns, M2, theta, and A2, B3, B4. So now our goal is to see how can we constrain these parameters using experiments and the theoretical constraints. And so in the following, I'm going to talk about how to use colliders and electroweak precision measurement to put constraint on mixing angle, and also theoretical bond unitarity and vacuum stability put constraint on B4 and A2 respectively. And also there's very important property we can require that the global minimum is the electroweak minimum, which is B equal to 246 and X equal to 0. And that way we can put a constraint on A2 and B3 plane. So, and in addition, we can, right now we currently, we have direct collider searches, right? So we can compare the production cross-section that satisfy all this constraint and compare that with the collider direct searches. And here, this is Atlas results on the search for electroweak singlet. And here, the yellow region are excluded. So, and the y-axis is the branching fraction of Higgs decays into new particle. And the x-axis is the mu, the signal strength of heavy Higgs decays into a particular channel. For example, gamma gamma zz bar, double double tau tau bb bar. So in this, so here they kind of exclude all these regions, and they here we take this. This line, which corresponds to 95% confidence level, observe 95% confidence level as our bound, which corresponds to this kappa prime, which is our sine theta square, smaller than 0.12. So as you can see, all this large region, it corresponds to large mixing angle. So only this tiny regions left. Okay, so now we can compare.
Can you just explain that plot a little more? For some reason, I'm confused. So H here is the 126 Higgs or the heavy Higgs?
Heavy Higgs, yeah.
Big H is the heavy Higgs.
Right.
I see. And the branching ratio, VR nu, is the branching ratio to non standard model, like the exotic final state, or what?
BRH is, this is standard, heavy Higgs decays into these five channels. So that's why you have to subtract it out, the ER.
Okay, and this is using the appropriate branching ratios that you, because it's just decaying for standard model mixing.
Right.
So it sort of weights all of them.
Yes.
How does this result not depend on the mass of the heavy Higgs?
The mass of heavy Higgs, it comes into the branching fraction. Because
yeah, this plot doesn't put in a mass of the heavy Higgs. Is this for a specific mass?
I mean, for different values of mass, you can still have different branching fraction, right?
Okay.
It depends on.
Presumably, this plot corresponds to a particular heavy Higgs mass,
right? No, I don't think so, because I mean you can have a like branching fraction that is function of M2, right? And so then by changing M2, you just have different branching fraction. So I don't think, I think M2 is automatically considered in this plot.
But if you make it heavy enough, you just can't produce it, right? So there has to be some mass dependence.
If that is heavy enough, then it probably, let me see. If that is too heavy, then you probably, it will correspond to, let me see. If that is too heavy, then it can decay into TT bar and WWZZ because they are the main decay channel. But in this, let's see. Let me see.
Because I could have a branching ratio be anywhere in that plot if it's completely reduced to the other. But I guess this doesn't come from direct insertion for the heavy leaks, but for the modifications of the signal strength of the light leaks.
Right, because here they rewrite this in terms of here kappa prime squared equal to 1 minus mu h. So once you know this, you can actually solve the, this is like very straightforward, right? You have mu h, this is x, and then this is y. And so for a given kappa prime, you can get the line. So
constraint on mu sub, the constraint on mu sub h for the 126 JPEGs, interpreted as a constraint on this model.
Right, so
fine.
Yep. Okay. And so we can then compare it with the electroweak precision measurement, which is STU results. And so the red line represents Atlas bound, and which is independent of M2. And this is STU fit, which is always much weaker than the Atlas bound independent. Of course, it gets stronger for large M2. But
why doesn't it get stronger for large M2?
Because it's proportional to sine theta, and there's a logarithm log M2 over M1 mm-hmm. times sine theta square. So which means if you have a larger M2, then you need to have a smaller sine theta square. Mm-hmm. Right. And
so what's the dominant constraint? Is it the S parameter?
Oh, I'm sorry?
What's the main constraint of driving precision?
Main constraint?
On the right. So on the, you have S, T, and U. I'm just wondering which one of those is the most constrained.
It's mainly from, let me see. I think it's from T parameter. Yes. And okay, and now we can look into the unitarity bound. A unitarity bound requires that at very high energy, the cross section does not blow up and is stay finite. So if we look at into this H2 scatter going to S2, then we can see by definition, the J equal to zero partial wave has to satisfy this condition. And we also know that for very high energy, that the real part of zero component partial wave goes to like 3 times B4 over 8 pi. So this gives us a constraint on B4, which has to be less than 4.2. And so also, from vacuum stability, we can also put a bound on A2. For example, the basic idea is that the scalar potential has to be positive definite, so it can be stable. And this is true even for very infinite S and H. So which implies that lambda and B4 has to be positive definite, okay? And for positive A2 is this, right? So at very large values of H and S, the only dominant term is quartic term, shown here. And so this, we require that this has to be positive. So in other words, if we apply, if we require A2 to be positive, this condition on the left-hand side automatically satisfied, right? And because this is trivially satisfied, because everything is positive. However, if A2 is negative, we can rewrite the scalar potential by completing the square. So the first term is positive definite, and the second term gives us a constraint on B4. So on A2, which has to be smaller than minus 4 times lambda B4. Okay, and we already know the constraint on B4. And so another constraint, interesting constraint, is that we require that electroweak vacuum V equal to 246 and X equal to 0 has to be a global minimum. And by requiring this condition, we can have the contour for different values, so M2 on B3 and A2 plane. So here the red line is for M2 equals to 270, and the blue lines for M2 equals to 370, and blue line is the black line is 500. And here's the specific value we used for B4 and cosine theta and M1. Okay, so we also want to look at the variation of B4. So what if we change a little bit the B4, we increase it a little bit, and we can see it actually gets weaker. And this is not difficult to understand because we just see from the vacuum stability here, if we increase this, actually the bound gets, it has the lower bound gets weaker. It has the lower bound will become larger. So now we can then compare that with the collider direct searches. And so here, the magenta region is for B4 equal to 1 and A2 equal to minus 1. And as you can see, because B4 is 1, so it kind of gives us very constrained, very strong bound. And the green region is for B4 equal to 3 and A2 equal to 1. And also, Atlas actually gives us a constraint. This is the block lines from Atlas. And CMS, the gamma gamma BB, which is shown here, the blue line, and the red line is for CMS BB 4B results. And so as you can see, all these results, the theoretical constraint is actually is tighter than the experimental constraint, because this is just ATEV results. So this is not surprising. And what we want to see is what would happen at 14 TeV. So from my projection, I used the 95% expected limit to do a projection, and we found that at 14 TeV, actually the whole magenta region can be ruled out by CMS and probably not Atlas, but using CMS gamma gamma BB results and 4B results, it can actually rule out some part of a large part of a region that is allowed by theoretical constraint.
Now, those regions will also be tested by improved measurements of the mixing of the Higgs pressure ratio, right? I mean, by improved measurements of mu H,
right?
The standard model things will constrain that mixing angle. Even
yes.
More. And that would presumably also move the allowed regions, right?
Yes, exactly.
So do you have projections for what the allowed regions would be? From indirect constraints?
No.
100 TeV
data? Not yet.
14 TeV, I mean.
This is 14, but
yeah.
Not yet, but I can certainly do it. Yeah. And So right now our goal is to see within those theoretical constraints, how large enhancement we can have. And from the 14 TeV, this is the ratio of the production cross-section. And we found for M2 equals to 270, we can actually have enhancement around 20. And the solid line is allowed, but the dashed line is the excluded by theoretical constraint. And also, we also look into the 1 TeV results. Most part of the region are excluded. And so the maximum enhancement here, shown here, is around 3 times larger. And similarly for 100 TeV. And so we can ask the question, how can we discover these new particles? And do we need to invent any new variable? And the answer is no, because actually we can discover them pretty easily because it's a resonance. So we can plot the resonance, the invariant mass of dihedral production. And as you can see here, for different values of M1, M2, we can actually see a very prominent peak at the value of M2. For example, the blue curve is 270, and the red curve is for 500 GeV. Sorry?
Does this include the resolution effects, the experimental resolution on the B-Corp energies?
BJET.
Because I assume you're looking at something, say you're looking at something like the gamma BB bar energy, invariant mass. The BB bar resolution isn't that great.
Yes, that's true. But here I just simply, this is just theoretical.
Okay.
Simulation. I didn't consider experimental resolution. The dip is this is because at the TT bar threshold you have 2 lambda, 2 MT.
Okay.
Right, and you can actually see that those diagrams actually develop imaginary part, and so those imaginary part gives the contribution. So it goes down and then it has a race. And actually,
we have mentioned before. So M2, there is no strong constraint on the heavy heat from the case of WG and GC at those masses. For example, at 270 GeV,
right.
M2 is still allowed.
Can you say again?
Are there any bounds on the heavy heat from WG and GC? From heavy heat going to WG and GC?
There are bounds on that, but I let me see. We have discussions on that on the competition between the heavy Higgs decays into WWZZ and heavy Higgs decays into H1. But it actually because here the heavy Higgs decays to H2. H1 is proportional to M2, but the decay width is proportional to M2. That means I have backup slide for that. So
it's fine. This is okay. Bottom line. It's okay.
Okay.
You can have a 270 M2 allowed.
Yeah.
You can 270.
It's
good, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I guess the question is the constraint on sine theta from direct production of M2 with decay to, say, W or ZV, better or worse than the constraints from standard
molecules?
Yeah. This 0.35.
We didn't look into that.
Okay.
Because the constraint from the heavy decays, they are almost sub 10% of the standard model rate.
Yeah,
but
they also have time for a big look.
Right. Well,
yeah,
but
it's still
it's sub 10% level, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
so
it's net.
So it seems like those would be pretty comparable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I can look into that, I can bring you to the backup slide, and then there's a introduction. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so here the next one is to adopt the model, and So by definition, there are two Higgs doublet models. You have two Higgs doublets in this model. In addition to the standard model, phi 1, you could also have another copy, phi 2. And here we focus on type 2, which means one Higgs doublet couples to the up quark, the other couples to down type quark and leptons. And this model is characterized by 7 parameters, including 4 mass parameters and 2 mixing angles and soft G to Bracken term. And for details, you can look into this paper. And so here, from this paper, they discussed 4 different benchmarks. And so this is the ratio of the production cross section. And so they can have this ratio, the around 60 to 70 at the 14 TeV. So this is like a pretty big enhancement. And for H1 and H2 benchmark. And we can look at the detail of those benchmark parameter points. And so we can first look at this, the difference between angles. Because as I mentioned, the front coupling measurement, the Higgs boson has to be very standard model-like. So so this is why this very close to 0.5, because it has to be very close to alignment limit. And in the alignment limit, we know that two Higgs doublet model is the coupling of the lightest Higgs is very close to the standard model Higgs boson. And we can also look at the H1. And as you can see, the reason it can have a such huge enhancement is because the Brenton fraction of Higgs H2 to H1 is very big, it's around 60. So this also explains why it can have a very big enhancement. So, and also you can use the same search strategy used by plotting the invariant mass of the dihigs of two Higgses, and then you can see a very prominent peaks. Okay, so in conclusion, I studied the different models and found that in the Higgs singlet model, there's the enhancement can go up to 20 times, and in type 2 Higgs doublet model, the enhancement can get to 60 to 70 times. And also, we found that LHC round 2 can rule out large part of parameter space that is allowed by theoretical constraints. And also, very importantly, we found the Higgs self-coupling in new physics models can potentially be measured, and at the LHC round 2 and 100 TeV collider because the large enhancement. So stay tuned, and let's hope we can find something at LHC round 2. Okay, thanks. Sure. So this one. There's a Brenton fraction. Yeah, here. So basically, the width of Higgs H2 to H1 is proportional to M2, and then, but for H2 to WZZ, proportional to.
Yeah, but that means that high masses is this one that we don't. Because it goes like M2 to Q, not M2.
Right, but the question is, we actually look into, for example, if you look at this Brenton fraction, this is Brenton fraction of H2 to H1, H1, and this is B3. So as I mentioned, we just adjust this the value of B3 to get the enhancement. Right, we tune that, this value. So here, this is the solid line is allowed region, and then the dashed line is excluded. So, and we found that actually just
no,
look
but
at.
That means, sorry, but then that means in the rest of the floor.
Right.
So even at, let's say, H, that means the rest of the branch of fraction is W, W, and ZZ. So you have, for all of the plot, at least 25% branching ratio to W, W, and ZZ.
You mean here?
The branching fraction goes down. So at zero, for example, you
right.
should get all the W, W, and ZZ. Right?
Yes, but I mean the mass. I mean here M2 comes into the formula, right? And
yeah,
this
so
B3.
Yeah, it just gets worse, as you see, right? As we increase the mass, the branching ratio to W, W, and ZZ increases
yes.
because the branching ratio to, as you see there. I mean, I would imagine that's the dominant chunk. That even if you go to
each, there's also T bar at time.
Yeah, so there is a huge component decaying to W, W, and ZZ.
Yes, I agree, but I mean, in this part, I agree, W, W, ZZ.
Even that part, because if you look at the LHC bounds now, I mean,
yeah.
they're pretty stringent. You're assuming that you have 25%. That means that you would get a heavy Higgs.
Right.
Well, I don't know what the production perception is.
Let's see.
So, but there's still a significant fraction that came to W, W, and ZZ. What's the production cross-section for the heavy heat?
It's
you're
just standard model times times for a beta, right?
Yeah, so that
right.
means this is a big thing.
Well, so it's probably ruled out in all those now, if all those in W, W, and ZZ. But if only then 30% of it goes into...
Yeah, but
as
you look
like
at
that... for 30 total production. And a factor of 10 from the sine squared beta
mm-hmm.
in the cross section.
Mm-hmm.
And then a factor of 3 if you're near the top of the allowed part of that 270 curve.
Yeah. Because
only a third of it.
Well, and then another
factor. Yeah, probably it's small. So it's probably like
3%.
Yeah. And then you. Yeah. Okay.
But it's true that the ZZ where you get more statistics.
Yeah.
That
would be more, very important.
Yeah.
Right.
But as it stands right now.
Yeah, probably now it's still fine.
Yeah, that's a good point. That I'll look into that. Yeah.
But ideally, you want to see this channel too, so that you can.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
You take the optimistic.
Yeah, that's true. And. Okay.
Yes, a lot during
the
Okay.
Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.